Good Sunday morning, everybody, and welcome on in. It is Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. Over the next hour, we'll dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. Some big fights coming up next week. You know, we got UFC 266, which is going to be coming up. We got Anthony Joshua returning to the ring. And an interesting fight, Alexander Usyk is going to be in the ring with him. So we'll get into some of those fights. Xander Zayas, one of the top boxing prospects on the planet, who fights out of here in our backyard, trains in Davie, Florida. He will be joining the program as well. And a little bit to get to from last night. So we'll start off with Bellator 266, which had the return of Miami's own Yoel Romero. Got a chance to have a conversation with Yoel this week. And it was, you know, one of those anticipated debuts. I was excited to see what Yoel was going to do with the new weight class. He was taking on Phil Davis. He was originally supposed to be taking on Anthony Rumble Johnson. That fight got to push back because of an eye injury that he had. And so he ended up in the Bellator cage with Mr. Wonderful, which didn't end up so wonderful for him. You know, it was a lot of what we've seen from Yoel in some of these fights, where it is a coin toss on what guy you're going to see. Are you going to see the guy who is, you know, hesitant to throw, is going to just look for those quick bursts, those openings? And I do think that we saw him have some success, especially in that second round. I do feel like he was starting to get off. The thing that really stood out, obviously, is when you get to round three and Phil Davis was starting to take him down on the regular. You know, Yoel made an effort to get up basically each and every time, which did lead to Phil Davis taking him down a total of five times over the fight. But really just never had that signature punch, that signature moment that really stood out for him. And I thought Phil Davis swept the fight for sure. You know, it ended up being a split decision. One of the judges gave two rounds to Yoel Romero. I disagree with that. I could see an argument for him probably getting round two. So I don't have a problem if he would have gone 29-28 Phil Davis's way. But the other judges gave Phil Davis a sweep in the fights. One of them giving him a 10-8 round. And, you know, for Yoel, I think the interesting thing here is, you know, he's 44 years old. You know, where does he go from here? There are some fun fights for him in Bellator. I think we still all want to see the Anthony Rumble Johnson fight. That's definitely one that I think is just a fight fan's fight. The one interesting thing that was tonight, you know, that was interesting from tonight is you saw Yoel go around the ring afterwards, and he was very confused that the fight was only three rounds. You could see him very upset about something. And at first I thought, oh, is he upset that Phil Davis basically, you know, took him down a bunch of times and didn't engage in the striking game? But he kept, like, just looking around bewildered. And, you know, you think about it, Yoel's probably been in, you know, how many main events now? So it may seem like a stupid thing. Like, I saw, like, him taking a lot of crap at this on social media, that how does Yoel not know that Bellator is only three rounds, you know? But if you've been in main events now, let me look back just real quick. All right, so Yoel Romero has basically been in five-round fights in one, two, three of his last five fights. And I think, actually, it should be four of the five, because one of them, he actually beat Luke Rockhold in the third round. But it was a five-round fight because it was supposed to be for the championship. He ended up missing weight in that fight. But the only fight that he hadn't fought out of his last five, which, you know, which spans back 3 years, was Paulo Costa, which was a three-round fight. And so, you know, it's actually probably not that weird that he didn't know. I know people are going to scoff at that and be like, come on, Tobin, really? You don't know how many rounds the fight is? But I can see it. It's not the weirdest thing in the world. Like, if you're in your first time in that organization, you've been fighting the UFC now for a long, long time, and you've basically been doing main event fights, you're probably thinking to yourself, this is a five-round fight. You probably don't even ask something like that. So I can see him being confused. I think the thing that's interesting for Yoel, though, is, like, if he would have had an extra two rounds, would anything have changed? You know, Phil Davis seemingly had gotten the upper hand on the wrestling, which is not something that Yoel's really had to deal with a whole lot of. You know, he's in there for the most part with strikers all the time. He's not in there with a guy who has the wrestling wrestling pedigree, and I know that Yoel arguably has a better pedigree because he's an Olympic silver medalist, but, you know, Phil Davis's credentials are really, really strong in the wrestling game, and he seemed like he found the path to victory there. So I think the question would have been, okay, if Yoel would have been given these two rounds, would he have been able to do anything with it? I don't know. You know, is he going to come out there? Is he going to? He would have. You would have thought had to go for, if he would have been given the opportunity to stay on his feet, he would have had to gone for broke a little bit in one of these rounds. But that is the thing, when it is Yoel, you really don't know. Like, sometimes you have the guy who's going to be in a turtle shell. Sometimes you have the guy who's going to be super aggressive. And I think for the most part, we've been seeing a guy who's been very much much more cautious about picking his spots, picking his shots. He's now lost four fights in a row. One of them being, you know, a very, very close title fight loss to Robert Whittaker. And the other one was to Paulo Costa, which I thought that he lost. You know, going back, I think he probably made Paulo Costa miss a lot more than thought on fight night, but I still thought he lost. I still thought he lost. And so it's really been a question. It's been a little bit of a lack of offense for Yoel. I think actually he's shown some really, really slick defensive stuff. It's just a matter of the output going the other way. And I'm a huge Yoel Romero fan. I love the guy to death. He's one of my favorite people to interview. You know, he's always repped the city really nicely, and it's just always been class to work with, you know, and cover. So, you know, for me, I don't want Yoel. I didn't think today was a performance where I'm like, man, Yoel should hang him up. I don't think that. I'm just looking around the Bellator landscape and wondering, all right, where does he go from here? You know, because we just haven't seen a guy who's looked very dangerous in winning a fight in a little bit. And, you know, they have a very good light heavyweight division. You know, do I think that played a part in Phil Davis being able to take him down? I think it probably played some of a role. You know, you have a guy who naturally is just a lot bigger than Yoel. You know, you can only, even though Yoel is a tank, there's only so many things that you could do with some of the size discrepancies there are. And I don't think that he looked as physically imposing next to Phil Davis, who himself looked unbelievable in this fight. So, bums me out. I love Yoel Romero. Still one of my favorites. And, you know, hopefully he'll get him the next time. You know, it was a bummer. As far as the UFC was concerned for tonight, you had UFC Fight Night. And the main event was Anthony Lionheart Smith. He got himself a win over Ryan Superman Spann, which was a really great performance. Pretty dominant performance from Anthony Smith, to be honest with you. If I'm honest, it was a really dominant performance over Ryan Spann. It was really just cracking him with some nasty stuff. Ends up choking him out and calls out Alexander Rakic for a rematch. Lost a decision to him not too long ago. And so I would say that those two are on a collision course to fight each other again, is what it appears to be. Ian Kutalaba getting himself a win over Devin Clark. Good performance from Ian. I thought that he looked really, really good. Arianne Lipsky got a win over Mandy Baum. You know, more of the same from her. Nate Maness getting a win over Tony Gravely. That fight was crazy because Nate was on his way out at the end of that first round and somehow survived, got back, and then knocked out Tony Gravely in the second round. That fight was crazy. And then Joaquin Buckley getting a win over Antonio Arroyo with a giant hematoma on his head. Not quite a Haseem Rahman, but I would say, like, if Haseem Rahman's hematoma had a Russian nesting doll, that was this hematoma. It was pretty close from Joaquin Buckley, who, you know, is becoming a highlight reel in his own right, but got himself a nice, nice win to start off the main card for the UFC. But yeah, I would say that for Anthony Smith, you know, getting himself in position with that win over Ryan Spann, you know, some people got mad at Anthony because he was talking to us. I admittedly, look, I wasn't really keen on to the lead up to this, but clearly there was some bad blood that led to him being so emotional about it. And it did cool off. Like, eventually they did get to the point where Ryan Spann and him were dapping each other up, and they seemed okay afterwards. You had to go back, and I had to listen to Anthony Smith's post-game or post-fight interview with Michael Bisping after, because it was, so much of it was bleeped out by ESPN. But he was basically saying the message of he's tired of everybody doubting him. He's tired of everybody saying that he sucks, that he only beats old guys. And I don't think of that being the case with him. I think that now he has beaten some old guys. He's lost to some old guys. He's lost to Glover Teixeira. You know, he's lost to John Jones. He's lost to guys who have been around there doing the damn thing. He did, you know, kind of get to his title run by beating old guys. Like, he beat a Rashad Evans. He beat a Mauricio Sogonhua. But I think Anthony Smith is a very dangerous dude. He's now back on a 3-fight win streak. He's one of the more active fighters. Like, he does fight a lot. So you do like that about Anthony Smith. But I thought, you know, today was one of the things with Anthony is he's so brutal when he fights, dude. Like, he can walk through the fire and he could just dish out some just serious damage, like just more so on the level of other people. Like, very rare are the fights that are boring with him. He's usually either taking insane punishment, or he's taken some serious punishment, or he's dished out some serious punishment and then has gotten petered out. All of his fights are very, very exciting. All of his fights are very exciting. I would say, honestly, the only knock against Anthony is really that he got dealt with against John Jones. And so you really haven't seen him back at that championship level yet. But, you know, it's a division I still think is an opportunity for him to get there. You know, Glover Teixeira is fighting for the belt again. Alexander Rakic, everybody's high on. So if he can go avenge that loss, I do think that he can find his way back there. But he's super quality, man. I don't think that it's a question of I don't think people should be questioning him or him taking it as, oh, people think that he suck. You know, he's doing the right things. He's steamrolling. If they put up people in front of him and he's steamrolling them in the first round, second round, and putting on that kind of an entertainment, I don't think he's going to be denied. And I think he will definitely get back to that title picture, especially since John's out of the picture. I think that this upcoming title fight with Jan and Glover is showing you, like, you know, this is almost the land of second opportunity when it comes to the light heavyweight division. We'll take a quick break here on the show. We will get into the title fights that are coming up next week in the UFC and boxing. Back with more after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. We got boxing prospect of the year, candidate for, you know, prospect of the year. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Xander Zayas is going to be on the program in about 15 minutes or so. But I want to get into a little bit of what's coming up next week. Got ourselves a big championship week of boxing and a big championship week of UFC that's coming up next week. I'm going to give the nod first to boxing because we did a lot of MMA on the other side on the first segment. So Anthony Joshua is going to be defending his heavyweight title belts against Alexander Usyk. That's coming up next week. Very excited about this fight. I'm excited to see Anthony Joshua back in the ring, see him back in action, see what he is going to bring to the table. You know, this is an interesting dynamic because this one kind of, I think, almost snuck up on everybody because we were at this weird place where all the attention has really been leaning towards Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder and their upcoming fight. And because they have the history, they have the drama behind them. Usyk and Joshua, this is kind of drama free. I don't feel like there's been a lot of bad blood. There really rarely is when it comes to an Anthony Joshua fight. And Alexander Usyk's kind of a goof on the microphone, so I don't think that it was going to lead to that anyway. But if you really think about it, a lot of ways, this is almost a much more intriguing fight than the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder one, because I think most people don't feel like Deontay has a snowball's chance in hell of beating Tyson Fury. You know, Tyson Fury, he's really only had a couple of rounds against Tyson Fury where he's had a lot of success. And I don't know how much people are buying into the Tyson Fury is not training as much. Deontay's training like crazy. They're going to attack the body, all that type of stuff. So, you know, that fight's coming up in a couple of weeks and we'll see. But this is an interesting one to me because I do think that Anthony Joshua is getting there with a very skilled, dangerous boxer. And those guys have given him some trouble. Those guys can give him a little bit of trouble. They can make some dangerous things happen. And I think we saw against guys who are a little bit quick, a little bit swifter, like Andy Ruiz, can get to Anthony Joshua, can bother Anthony Joshua. Now, I don't think that, you know, Usyk and Andy Ruiz don't necessarily have similar styles. Like, Andy Ruiz's ultimate, like, swift hands, swift footwork, all that type of stuff. Usyk just has, you know, some of that crisp Ukrainian, just doesn't seem to have a real flaw to his style at all, but is still making that jump up to heavyweight. And we really don't know what that's going to mean for him. You know, what is it going to be when he's really, when he really gets cracked by somebody? We saw against, you know, Derek Chisora, it wasn't the most impressive showing in the world. I think that it, you know, he's had a couple of fights at heavyweight. Chaz Witherspoon, which was a late replacement, a guy that he beat on a week because he was originally supposed to fight Tyrone Spong. And then Spong had a positive test and ended up getting scratched. So they put Chaz Witherspoon in there for his American debut. And, you know, it was a bummer for my guy Tyrone because I really wanted to see what he could do against Usyk. He was really supposed to be that first guy who was going to test Usyk and see what kind of a chin that he has at heavyweight. And I don't know if we really have an answer to that yet. I would say for Anthony Joshua, I do think that for him, he can really make a statement here, because I do think for AJ, though he has more belts, I do think that the mainstream opinion, and I don't know what it is in England, so I don't want to speak for the whole world, but I do think that at least the American sense is that Tyson Fury is the man. You know, he was the lineal champion. They tried that whole narrative, never really lost his championships. And I think that the way that he went about beating Deontay Wilder. See, here's the thing that I find fascinating about both of them, right? And they weren't necessarily in the same situations, but they almost were. And that is this. When Anthony Joshua lost to Andy Ruiz and got demolished by him and humiliated by him in Madison Square Garden, he came back and he looked really good against Andy Ruiz. He looked leaner. He looked quick. He boxed with that jab. He used, you know, his range. He made it really tough for Andy Ruiz, but he never really went in for the kill. And I really thought that the opportunities were there for him to do it, especially an out of shape Andy Ruiz, a guy that looked nowhere near the guy that ended up winning the title originally from him. And I thought that in a situation like that, it would have been nice for Anthony Joshua to show, hey, I'm all the way back from that loss. And I don't think that he necessarily did that. And that, I think, is just in the back of my mind. I don't really, look, I count the Kubrat-Pulev win. Like, he won the fight. Good for him. But nobody thought that he wasn't going to win that fight. And nobody thought that a guy in Kubrat-Pulev really had a shot in hell of beating him. All respect. But, you know, this is a guy who I think that everybody thought was going to get handled pretty easily by Anthony Joshua. So he ends up finishing him in the ninth round. With Tyson Fury, when he had his fight with Deontay Wilder, which a lot of people thought that he won the first fight. I didn't have it, you know, I thought that I get the argument of him winning on scorecards, but I think the draw was almost a poetic ending to their first fight because of how crazy that 12th round was, where Deontay puts him down nearly for dead and he rises like the Undertaker. A lot of people say, oh, he came back and won that round. I think that's bull crap. I think that if you get, you don't get more credit for coming back after you get nearly knocked into another dimension and come back and win the round. That's not a thing for me. I'm sorry. But the point is, the way that fight ended obviously didn't sit well with Tyson Fury, and he did feel like he had some success with how the 12th round was turning. And for him, he took that game plan and he executed it to perfection in the rematch. Became more of a bulldozer, became more of a bruiser, used his strength and maybe some dirty tactics too. But he ended up really putting a beating on Deontay Wilder and put no doubt that this guy's the top heavyweight on the planet. And so I think in a lot of people's minds, that is a fight that cements Tyson Fury as the number one heavyweight on the planet, not Anthony Joshua. However, he's taking on a guy here in Alexander Usyk who everybody finds to be a very, very credible opponent. You know, I don't know if he'll get a ton of credit for going and beating this guy in a lopsided decision because he is a lot naturally bigger than him. I do think that he has to make somewhat of a statement in this fight. Not because he isn't going to get the Tyson Fury fight. I think we all know that Tyson Fury and him will eventually be on a collision course to fight each other. But I think it's important for him to reestablish to some people, like, hey, I'm the man. Because, for example, like, this fight almost snuck up on me, right? Like, I know when Anthony... This is, in my mind, a more intriguing fight on paper than Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder. But I still have in my mind, hey, Tyson Fury's coming back in October. Early October, I know Anthony that Tyson Fury is going to be back in the ring. Anthony Joshua's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's next week, right? And so, I realize this week, I'm like, oh, it's, you know, I started seeing the Instagram post. I'm like, oh, it's coming up in a week. That's cool. But I've had the Tyson Fury, Deontay thing in my mind, and it's not as interesting a fight as this is. So, I think that, and I think a lot of that lies with Anthony Joshua. I really do. I think that he is in a position right now where it would be nice for him to go out there and get him. Now, can he? You mean, like, is he going to put himself out there like that? Because Usyk can box, man. Usyk is a bad mother bleeper when it comes to his boxing skill set, what he brings to the table. He was the undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world. He had all the belts. He had the trophy. He had the whole deal. And this move up was kind of natural. Everybody thought that was coming. Probably not at the... He's probably taking Anthony Joshua with not as much in-ring heavyweight experience as he'd like. I'm sure the pandemic had something to do with that. We've talked to plenty of fighters about how that's kind of messed him up. But now that it's here, he's really got this chance to upset the apple cart here in that, hey, you win all these belts, it's kind of back on you. Now, maybe it'll go back to, hey, he's got to fight Anthony Joshua again and rematch him and things like that. But he's got his chance. And I don't think that if he is to win, I don't feel like in a rematch, he's going to let himself go like an Andy Ruiz did. I do ultimately think Anthony Joshua is going to get the job done. I think that he knows all the things that I'm saying. I think that because I'm not the only one saying them, I think that I'm sure the pundits all feel like the same thing, that they want to see the AJ who's going to go out there, make a statement, be the people's champion, the golden boy, the thing that the guy that everybody is looking to uphold, the great showing of boxing, be the picturesque boxer, all that type of stuff. And he physically has a lot of tools that, if he uses them right, should be giving Alexander Usyk a lot of trouble. They should. He's got a bigger reach by 4 inches. He's a lot taller than him. You know, he's got 3 inches on him in height. He's got him on in age. All this type of stuff. He's got all the tangibles as far as body type. But Usyk, you probably could argue, is just a better skilled boxer. Just a better skilled boxer, better all around. Definitely don't think the power will naturally be as there as it is for most heavyweights. But here's the thing with AJ. We got questions about his chin. We got questions about, hey, can he take a punch? Even if it's not from the biggest puncher in the world. If he gets rocked a little bit, will that mess him up? So I think that he's really got to go on the offensive here. I really, really do. I think that he has to make a statement to Alexander Usyk early. Don't let him get comfortable. Don't let him start racking up rounds, because I do think that this could be a fight where AJ could be in trouble, find himself down, you know, 5-1 early if he's just playing around a little bit too much. I think this is one of those fights that for his best interest, he should try and get Usyk out there in like 4 or 5 rounds. Now, Usyk may show that he's got the heart of a champion, that this is the division he's made for, and that ain't going to happen, playboy. But I don't know. I think that almost the deeper the fight goes, the more comfortable Usyk gets, the worse off it is for AJ. But I do think AJ is going to get it done. I ultimately do. I got more of a, you know, for all of his flaws, and he does have them. And I think a lot of these guys do. I think that all these heavyweight, top heavyweights have flaws. I think that the bigger you are, the more you open yourself up to be there for flaws. One for a couple of things. Guys are bigger. Usually bigger guys just aren't as crisp. Bigger guys got to deal with bigger guys hitting them. So I think that's kind of why everybody loves the division so much, why it makes it so fun. But, you know, you look at the names on his resume, Vladimir Klitschko, Joe Parker, Povetkin, Andy Ruiz, Dillian White. You know, he's got some real quality guys on there. And all I think he needs is to really get a signature win over a boxer everybody respects. And I do think that, okay, one, I think it'll make the Tyson Fury fight that much bigger. I'm bummed that the fight between them isn't happening right away. But I do think that, hey, it's been a pandemic. Boxing and needing a big fight's been a little bit on the outs. This can put a real jolt into it, I think. I really, really do. So I'm going to pick AJ to win. I'm going to say like fifth or sixth round TKO. I think he's going to stop him. If he doesn't, we could be here next week talking about, you know, Usyk finding his way to a decision win. Or maybe even a surprising stoppage, but I don't think that's the way it's going to go. I think AJ knows what he's got to do in this bout with everybody there judging him, watching him, all that type of stuff. As far as the UFC, again, it's a pack week of it's a pack Saturday of boxing, and you know, Lord knows I'm going to be enjoying the fighting a lot more than Kane's football. Next week, this is a stacked card coming up. You got Alexander Volkanovsky defending his title against Brian Ortega. This, you want to talk about proving? I think both of these guys have a lot to prove. I think Alexander Volkanovsky, a lot of people look and say, hey, you didn't win that last Max Holloway fight. You know, the first one when you won the fight, some people thought it was close. The second fight, we definitely thought that Max won. You got away with one there. So Max isn't fighting again. He's fighting Brian Ortega, who's lost to Max Holloway. He's coming off a win against the Korean Zombie, which was about almost a year's time ago. And this is his opportunity to show, hey, you're championship material. Because when he got to the top, knocked out Frankie Edgar to get to the Max Holloway championship fight, Max Holloway dealt with him quite easily. Really, really put it on him to get that win. Whereas Volkanovski, I think, is everybody's just kind of looking at him and saying, Max should maybe have the belt. And so both of them, I think, have a lot of proving to do based on their fights with Max Holloway, because a lot of people regard Max Holloway as maybe the best featherweight on the planet, or the best featherweight of all time as well. And, you know, his last time out there, everybody loved Max Holloway's performance against Calvin Kattar. I mean, they were in love. We couldn't stop talking about it. I remember I was, where was I watching that fight? I think it was in Fight Island. I feel like I was at SeaWorld watching that fight, seeing what Max Holloway did to Calvin Kattar. So this is an opportunity for either one of them to really come out there and show the man. I think that if I have to lean it, and then listen, I feel bad because I had Alexander Volkanovski on a few months ago. I told him I watched that Ultimate Fighter. I never watched that Ultimate Fighter. I didn't watch a lick of it. It seemed like there was a little bit of drama between both of them, but I didn't watch a lick of it. I'm going to go with Brian Ortega. I think Brian Ortega is going to pull this out. I'm going to go Brian Ortega, sneaky submission to get the win on this one. Then you have Valentina Shevchenko against Lauren Murphy. Bless Lauren Murphy's heart. Valentina Shevchenko is just on another level right now. She's just an absolute assassin and is just a wrecking machine for anybody who stands in front of her. So good luck, Lauren Murphy. Hey, as Tua said to Mac Jones, good luck, Lauren. Then, of course, you have the return of Nick Diaz, Robbie Lawler, rematch 16 years in the making. Fun fight. Great fight for Nick Diaz to come back for. Robbie Lawler, we haven't seen in the cage in a very long time either. So we're getting a kind of a fresh Robbie Lawler who's been on a bit of a downturn where he's lost four straight. He's lost five out of six. The last time that he won a fight was against Donald Cerrone. That was a close fight too. That wasn't necessarily a runaway. So he has got himself a fun fight here. I think one that'll get him motivated and get him amped up the right way. And then what are we going to get from Nick Diaz? Are we going to get Nick Diaz shenanigans this week during the press week? I think that's going to make it an intriguing thing. And I do think that, you know, Nick is probably the big selling point of this week. I think I don't know if he's going to be doing the ESPN car wash. That was never really his bag, but it's hard for me to pick this fight. I lean Robbie Lawler just because I feel like he's been more active. I love Robbie Lawler, and you know that fight was a long time ago, so I don't know what you take from a 16-year-old fight. So I'm going to lean Robbie on that one to get the nod, but I'm excited to see Nick Diaz back. Curtis Blaydes versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik, another amazing fight. I'm going to go with my guy Rozenstruik, friend of the show. I love me some Biggie Boy. Shout out to Suriname. Shout out to my guy Tyrone Spong as well. And then you got Jessica Andrade, Cynthia Calvillo is going to be a great fight. The one thing that may be a bit of a hangup, I saw some headlines this week about Dan Hooker maybe having visa issues. I hope that's not the case for him. I love watching Dan Hooker fight. So we'll keep an eye on that one as well. But that one's that's a hell of a fight Saturday you got coming up next Saturday between Anthony Joshua fighting, and it'll be, you know, probably like 5-6 o'clock. So you got that as a little warm up to get you ready for UFC next weekend. So really, really fun night of fights. Can't wait to recap for you. When we come back, we're going to talk to Xander Zayas. He could be winning Boxing Prospect of the Year as he embarks. He's now 4-0 in the year of 2021, and he's looking to add even more to that. We'll get to Xander Zayas coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. It's Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. You know, we got coming up today, it's Dolphins home opener against the Buffalo Bills. I saw those Bills fans down there, you know, taking over our beaches. Get the hell out of here with your flaming tables. Well, you know, if you love Buffalo so much, stay your ass up there and eat your stupid Buffalo wings. Wildly overrated. Anybody can make them. And forget about that. But don't worry, it's gonna be high time for some punishment today when Josh Allen throws a couple picks to Xavien Howard. Because as we say, X gonna take it from you. That's what he's gonna do. But another X could be making his impact on the South Florida sports landscape, and that is one Xander Zayas, who, you know, we've had on this show basically since before his pro debut. He is a delightful young man, an absolute monster in the ring. He just improved to 10-0 last weekend in Arizona on the Oscar Valdez card. And we got a chance to speak with him this week at the Sweatbox Gym, Javier Centeno's gym in Davie. And we spoke to the young 19-year-old who is now 10-0 as he embarks on getting Boxing Prospect of the Year. Here's our conversation with Xander Zayas. Very excited to talk to our next guest. We're here from Sweatbox Gym in Davie. Xander Zayas joining us here fresh off going to 10-0. Crazy, man. I can't believe it. Talked to you before your pro debut, and now you're 10-0, 4-0 for the year in the midst of a pandemic. It's wild, man. How did it feel to get to double digits?
Well, Brendan, first of all, thank you again for giving me the opportunity. Man, like you said, I cannot believe it. 10-0, double digits, feels amazing. Had a tough fight with a tough opponent. Got the victory, that is the most important part, and now we on to the next.
I know it's not your first decision, but how did it feel to get tested? Like, you took some shots, you steamrolled through, you knocked them down. We saw the emotion from you, given the Tyler Hero snarl at one point, which was badass, by the way. But like, what was it like? I guess going through a back and forth of that, you know, getting to see yourself tested a little bit.
It felt amazing. It showed me that I can hang in there. It showed me that I know how to adjust to whatever they put in front of me. Again, I had a tough guy. We were fighting in Arizona where the heat was a key factor, fighting outside. So it was something, it was an amazing experience. I learned a lot, and we're going to work and correct every mistake we did.
Yeah, I was talking to your trainer a little bit about that, about the heat. And they were saying that on the broadcast, but what was that like? Because I know you train in a very hot environment, but was it different, like fighting in it? Like, was there a moment where you're like, holy crap, I can't believe how this feels?
It was different because it was dry. Here it's kind of like humid, so yeah, it's hot, but there was like dry heat. And plus the sun was on my corner while I was fighting. So every time I was getting a rest in between rounds, it was just the sun on my face. But, you know, we try to control it. We try to, you know, stay calm, stay composed, and do my job. You know, I think I did it very well. I listened to the corner. Again, a couple mistakes that I got to correct. But back to the drawing boards. I mean, this is my 10th fight. I'm only 19 years old. We keep learning. We keep getting experience, and we keep getting better.
Yeah, like how is that going through a fight where, like, you maybe not necessarily put a guy away? You put him down very hard, but he's a tough guy, very, very durable. Your kid's been fighting forever. Is there, mentally for you, like, is there something that you have to, like, pace yourself because you maybe want to get him out there, but you don't want to burn yourself out? Like, how is that development going for you?
Well, this last fight, I kind of experienced that a little bit in the third round. I hurt the guy, and I kind of went for the kill. But then I realized the guy's durable. He's been doing this for a long time. He's been in the pro game for a long time. He knows how to survive. So, you know, after that, I realized, hey, it's not about throwing a lot of punches. It's about placing the right shots. So the fourth round, I kind of, you know, boxed him out. And then in the fifth and sixth round, I kind of closed out the show strong. In the sixth round, I hurt him again. And that's when I realized, hey, you can hurt a guy not by throwing a lot of punches, but by placing the shots in the correct position, the correct spots. So again, it was just an amazing experience, a tough guy. It was kind of like, man, this guy's not giving up. This guy's coming to fight. Yeah. So he kept me going. He kept me, you know, focused on the goal and just winning, trying to win the fight.
Did you guys share any words after the fight? Like, did you?
Oh,
guys,
yes, most definitely.
What was the messages you guys had for each other? Did he say anything about what he thought of you as a fighter?
Well, he told me that that I will be a world champion in the future, to keep working, to keep improving, to keep getting better. You know, I told him that from the beginning, when I accepted the fight, when I knew I was going to fight him, I knew that he was going to be a tough opponent. And his brother fought Oscar Valdez, his brother's a former world champ contender. He fought Adrian Granados in his last fight before mine, which was a former world champion contender. So these are guys that are coming to fight. They're here to put on a show, and I was just thankful for him to, you know, for giving me the opportunity and sharing that experience with me.
I'm sure it must have been nice not having to go to 147. How did it feel like getting in a new weight class?
Well, this fight around, we made 152. He wanted to fight at 152, so we agreed to that. Which it wasn't hard at all. I mean, I had 7-8 pounds extra on me to play around with.
Yeah.
So it was pretty easy weight cut. I mean, easier than most time I made weight the day of the weigh-in, like 5 hours before. I always make weight the day of the weigh-in, go into the scheduled weight. But this time around was pretty easy. I did it simple and just in and out. But yeah, 154 from now on is going to be even easier.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're always disciplined. Like, it was, but like, I don't know how you do it, dude. I don't know how, like, you're freaking huge for 147. Like, I was next to Ugas the other day. You're way bigger than him, and he's not a small welterweight. So I don't know how you do it. Like, is there a weight that you ultimately see yourself at? Like, do you just want to focus at 154 and that's gonna be the plan for a while? Like, what do you think? Does the end game matter to you right now, or is it just finding the super comfort zone and doing your best at 154 for right now?
Well, right now, you know, at the beginning of my career, I knew that I wasn't going to win a world title at 147, but that was the weight class that I was comfortable at. That was the weight class that was easy for me to make. I felt strong, I felt big. Now when we made the change because we are sure that we will have a title run here at 54. We will win a world title at 154, and we will eventually move up, you know, in my career, as my career goes on, to 60, 68, maybe 75, end up my career at 175. But for now, 154 is the goal. 154 is what I'm focused on, and I want to, you know, win everything here.
You're 10-0. How close does the title feel? Like, there's talks this, you know, you might be ESPN Prospect of the Year. Does it feel like you get to a number like 10? Does it feel like, man, okay, like I can start seeing
I'm getting title closer. Fight?
Yeah, like, I'm serious. Does that feel like it's most, starting to close
yes,
in?
Yes, most definitely. But right now, again, the goal is to win Prospect of the Year, fight at least two more times this year. And I say by 2023, beginning, mid, or end of 2023, I should be fighting for a world title.
You're gonna fight two more times this year?
Yes, sir. Two more times this year.
All right. So what's the plan? So you just fought last in September. So what do you want to knock off? Like, when if you everything goes according to plan, obviously.
We are going to knock off October 23rd.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Yes, sir. Atlanta.
Atlanta?
Yes, sir. The Shakur Stevenson, Jermell Herring show.
That's a big show, bro.
Yes, sir.
That's a big show.
So then after, hopefully December, December 11, New York, Heisman Trophy. We could go after
the ceremony.
We could go after that one. But for now, the focus is on October 23rd, most definitely. I want to focus on that, put all my attention into that. And after the victory, October 23rd, I focused on everything else.
Has it? Did you think like you'd be able to get all these fights in this year?
No, not at all.
Like
I was thinking after this, then December most definitely. But you know, Top Rank came back to me and say, "Hey, let's close out the year strong. Let's put a great performance this two times around, and then we'll get that prospect of the year. No questions about it." So yeah, I told him, "Hey, if you're with the plan, I'm with the plan. Just get me in there now. I'll do what I do."
Dude, you're literally like you're one of the nicest people I've met in sports. And a very, very humble young man. Is it weird at all, like having the attention start to focus to you? Because like I'm telling you, as a guy who's known you for a long time, it was really cool. Like they were talking about you on the broadcast, the backstage shots. They're talking about Xander. What's his career? What can he be? Everybody thinks you're going to be a champion. Andre Ward and Tim Bradley are critiquing everything that you do. They're breaking everything down. They're looking for every flaw. They're talking about every positive. Like, is that weird at all? Like that you're getting like the microscope is starting to be there. Like that kind of shine. Is that strange at all, or is it awesome? Do you love it?
Somewhat strange. You know, at 19, I didn't expect to be where I am today. Yeah, I knew that it was going to happen, but I didn't expect it this soon. But at the same time, I love it. At the same time, I'm catching on to the vibe. You know, it's just part of the job. As long as I stay focused, everything will keep building up. But yeah, I'm loving it. I'm not going to lie to you.
Nice. Well, you deserve it, man. You work.
Thank you very much.
You work your butt off, and it's really it's good to see that happen to good people.
Yeah, you know, hard work, dedication, it always pays off. Again, I just have to continue to stay focused, have my team behind me, and just do my best every time I step into the ring.
Absolutely. Before I get you out of here, and we wrap things up. It's unfortunate that you have, you know, the Lakers, they're going and taking a Hail Mary at Russell Westbrook. Not as good a move. I know they wanted Kyle Lowry, but the Heat got Kyle Lowry.
Okay.
So that's unfortunate for you guys once the finals rematch comes around this year. are you disappointed that the Heat beat you out for getting Kyle Lowry? Like that's tough.
I'm not disappointed. I mean, who we got? Westbrook, yeah, one of the best point guards in the league. Dwight Howard, that is a good.
Yeah, he came back.
Who we got? Jordan too.
You guys got Kendrick Nunn from the Heat. I actually really like Kendrick Nunn.
Kendrick Nunn is nice.
I'm gonna miss Kendrick Nunn.
We have Trevor Ariza.
And you have Heat killer Malik Monk.
We have a nice veteran.
That it's not enough though, because
lineup.
Bam's gonna be taking that next step. You got Jimmy. Yeah, he's not gonna be rested up.
Hero is coming up too.
Hero's looking swole, dude.
Yeah,
he's looking swole.
But man, I think the experience is going to be our advantage this time around again.
No, it's okay. Listen, you got the lucky break of Goran getting hurt, but it's over now. All the reinforcements are there now for the Heat.
It's the same thing with the Lakers. You got all this all heads with maybe getting injured, but as long as they stay healthy, it's gonna be hard. It's gonna be uphill for a lot of teams.
Is basketball your favorite sport outside of boxing?
Yes.
By far. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not good at basketball player, but I'm nice. I could shoot, I could cross, I could dribble some a little.
Well, listen, you guys can catch Xander's ass. He just told you. October 23rd, yes, ESPN, Jamel Herring versus Shakur Stevenson. He's gonna be on that card. It's great to see the shine for you, man. Congratulations on 10-0, and we look forward to continuing to watch the journey.
Thank you very much again, Brendan. It means a lot. To all you guys, thank you for all the love. Thank you for all the support. Xander's Eyes, October 23rd, ESPN. Don't miss it.
Thanks again to Xander for joining us on the show. Always enjoy speaking with him. Cannot wait for his next fight coming up there. You heard it on October 23rd in Atlanta on the Shakur Stevenson, Jamel Herring card. That's our show for this week, everybody. Enjoy the football. Thank you for tuning in. We have a great fight weekend coming up next weekend to recap, as you guys heard. If you missed any of the show, please download the Tobin Fight Show podcast, and we'll talk to you guys next time.